un paso atrás en la búsqueda de justicia, porque el amor que siento por ti, la indignación y la impotencia son más fuertes. Por lo que exijo al gobierno mexicano la presentación con vida de todos los detenidos desaparecidos por motivos políticos y sociales del país. Verdad, juicio y castigo a los autores materiales, intelectuales de estos crímenes de esa humanidad. Respeto a los derechos humanos y garantías constitucionales. Un alto a esta guerra contra el pueblo. Alto a la impunidad. Alto a la criminalización de la protesta popular. Hago un llamado a las familias que han sido víctimas de esta política criminal. A las madres que están pasando por este dolor, les pido que no pierdan la esperanza y que tengan fe. Pero también las invito a luchar, a que no dejen que el miedo y el terror las paralicen, a que no se conviertan en cómplices del Estado con su silencio, a que no dejen en el olvido a sus seres queridos, a que luchemos contra la impunidad. Vivos los llevaron y vivos los queremos. Atentamente, la madre que escribió esa carta, la señora María Oliva Jiménez, y es del Comité de Familiares de Detenidos Desaparecidos hasta encontrarlos. Muchas gracias.
Están en algún sitio, concertados, desconcertados, sordos, buscándose, buscándonos, bloqueados por los signos y las dudas, contemplando las verjas de las plazas, los timbres de las puertas, las viejas azoteas, ordenando sus sueños, sus olvidos, quizá convalecientes de su muerte privada. Nadie les ha explicado con certeza si ya se fueron o si no, si son pancartas.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica. Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblossinfronteras@gmail.com.
Dicen que ahora viven en tu mirada, sosténlos con tus ojos, con tus palabras, sosténlos con tu vida, que no se pierdan, que no se caigan. Escucha, escucha, otra voz canta.
Cuando empezaron a desaparecer hace 3, 5...
Tenemos que seguir demandando que se cancele la elección por las violaciones graves a la Constitución de la República.
El candidato presidencial del Movimiento Progresista de México, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, llamó a Felipe Calderón a definirse públicamente sobre el dinero utilizado por el PRI y Enrique Peña Nieto durante las elecciones. Durante su participación en el Festival por la Democracia, organizado por trabajadores de la cultura, López Obrador advirtió que en las actuales condiciones del país, el encubrimiento del delito sería equiparable a la traición a la patria.
Mucho ayudaría que Felipe Calderón diera a conocer las pruebas que posee, en particular sobre el manejo del dinero que utilizó el PRI a través de las instituciones bancarias. Es un hecho que él tiene toda la información. De él depende la Secretaría de Hacienda y la Comisión Nacional Bancaria y de Valores. De modo que aprovecho mi presencia en este evento, en el Zócalo de la ciudad, corazón político, social, cultural de la República, para emplazar a Felipe Calderón a que se defina públicamente sobre este importante asunto de cara al pueblo de México. Felipe Calderón sabe, por su profesión de abogado, que cualquier persona enterada de la comisión de un delito tiene la obligación de denunciarlo, so pena de convertirse en encubridor.
El candidato presidencial mexicano declaró que en cualquier otro país democrático, las irregularidades ocurridas en las elecciones bastarían para invalidar los comicios. En el Festival por la Democracia, el escritor Paco Ignacio Taibo II, integrante de Morena Cultura, manifestó que el pueblo no cederá en su demanda por echar abajo el resultado de la elección presidencial. Por otro lado, Peña Nieto declaró al diario La Jornada que no responderá a los comentarios que dicen podrían generarse conflictos sociales si el Tribunal Electoral lo declara presidente electo de México.
Compa, te digo, escucha, te están robando el mandado.
Un grupo de ciudadanos mexicanos entregó el miércoles al cónsul de la ciudad californiana de Los Ángeles una carta de inconformidad y petición de anulación de la elección presidencial del 1 de julio. El documento, con más de 1,000 firmas, fue recibido por el cónsul David Figueroa Ortega.
Ellos nos han solicitado vía Cancillería que lo turnemos hacia el Tribunal Electoral, lo cual lo habremos de hacer con mucho gusto.
Las firmas fueron recabadas por voluntarios en los últimos días en el sur de California, como en un festival cultural en el este de Los Ángeles, zona conocida por su fuerte influencia mexicana. Escuchemos las voces de algunos de los participantes.
Estamos luchando, como están haciéndolo en México los compañeros. Este es un evento en solidaridad con lo que está pasando en México y en apoyo al Yo Soy 132, al Movimiento de Morena, a los compañeros de San Salvador Atenco y a todas las organizaciones que están luchando para que el impostor pues no llegue al poder, ¿no?
El gobierno, así como se impone contra nosotros, así nosotros tenemos que también imponernos en contra del gobierno. Más que nada, nuestra letra, nuestra música, nuestra escuela es rebelde.
Toda la situación que está pasando en México, desde asesinatos, desde la pobreza, cada día más personas pobres, y porque mi familia está allá, y porque también por consecuencia de la situación de México es que yo tuve que venirme acá y tengo muchos años sin convivir con mi madre y mis hermanos.
Principalmente es por lo que acaba de acontecer en México el 1 de julio, que fue un fraude, elección que no ganó la mafia del poder, no lo pudo ganar con votos y tuvieron que comprarlos.
El amor por mi país y por la injusticia que está pasando en México, nos hemos unido a hacer un solo frente en contra de la imposición para luchar. Yo creo que las pruebas que se han presentado están fundadas en realidades y en base a la constitución de los artículos que fueron violados, y como ciudadanos hemos sido testigos, lo hemos visto en el internet y plasmado en casos de las violaciones que hubo, y yo creo que no podemos hacer eso, no podemos esperar ni aceptar esos resultados. Aparte, fuera de que Enrique Peña Nieto compró la presidencia, violaron los derechos de los ciudadanos de votar, de sufragio. Aparte de eso, la corrupción que trae Enrique Peña Nieto, no, a México se va a acabar, y tenemos que estar conscientes de eso y prevenirlo.
Se tiene que llevar primero a la Corte Interamericana de Derechos Humanos, porque México suscribió los tratados de San José. En esos tratados de San José se establece que México, como país democrático, debe tener elecciones libres, auténticas y democráticas, y eso no sucedió.
Siento que es el compromiso como Morena, integrante de Morena, que tenemos que hacer algo. Estamos hartos, estamos con esa indignación, ¿no?, de que ya es hora. Estamos en contra de que nos impongan un candidato que ni siquiera ha sido elegido por el pueblo. Entonces estamos en contra de la imposición.
La patria no se vende, se ama y se defiende.
Este pensamiento es de Nelly Campobello y se llama Amar a México. Podría decir también, pero no deseo decirlo, ¿cuánto ganaría esta raza nuestra, llena de cualidades, si aboliera la debilidad de caer en la imitación? Imitación de lo inútil, por supuesto, de lo fácil. He dicho que no lo digo, solo deseo insinuarlo. Si el mexicano ayudara al mexicano, juntos cantaríamos un himno a nuestra raza india, nuestros fantásticos mestizos, pletóricos de recursos y palabras, y mientras más desheredados, más capaces e heroicos. Porque yo me digo, amar al pueblo no es solo gritar con él en las fiestas patrias, ni rayar un caballo, ni deglutir de un sorbo media botella de tequila. Amar a nuestro pueblo es enseñarle el abecedario, orientarlo hacia las cosas bellas.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Y buenas tardes. Este es el programa. Se llama Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Coming up now in English and in English. and very little Spanish, posiblemente no español, pero mea culpa y qué lástima, pero that's the way it is. I'm Robert Norse, and stay tuned for the next 2 hours. We're going to be talking local stuff, some of the updates on struggles of homeless folks outside, activists who tried to support them, and, well, assorted interviews, commentaries, and your phone calls. Call-in number here is 427-3772, 831-427-3772, or 469-3119, 469-3119. I'm Robert, and again, don't be afraid. Give me a call. Tell me what's happening. Got breaking news, got breaking complaints, got something to add, something that has not been said that should be said about what we're talking about. Or maybe we need to change the subject. I will probably resist any violent changes of subject. But I'm up for a diversity of subjects, perhaps. So, but we'll see. Again, 427-3772. And I'll make ready to go into the show and make ready to make a few phone calls if you feel like calling in. Let one of them be to Free Radio.
Do you seek some sort of shelter? Do you feel left all alone? Has the rain torn you asunder? Have you strayed too far from home? Is that catching all the grumbling from the buildings up above? Are you putting all your eggs into the one thing that you love? Have you found the better bargain? Do you have such fashion flair? Have you fallen in with strangers who don't care the way I care? Is that something you believe in, settled in and screwed on tight? Did you have to steal the courage just to wear it out at night? Is this a pick-me-up or put-you-down for all the simple folk? Is that a starting point, a calling card, a riddle or a joke? Is that what you've come up with? I'm not so sure about that. Do you call that a hat? Do you look to flaunt your freedom? Is that really what you meant? Is it free there for the taking? It's worth every single cent. Will it keep you from the windstorm? Will it shade you from the sun? Will it save you from your troubles when the day is finally done? Is that a question or an answer or a statement or a fact? Is that an accident, an attitude, a fashionist attack? Are you happy undercover? How's the echo under that? Do you call that a hat? I've always been your true advisor. Did someone tell you that I lied? Who are the ones that came between us that brought you to the darker side? You've always been the seeker. I have been your second skin. How did I become the pupil on the outside looking in? Is that a movement or a mix-up or a momentary lapse? Is that a crisis, a condition, philosophical collapse? Is that a new tradition? I see nothing wrong with that. Or is it just a hat?
And that was another one, which you probably heard if you were listening to my Sunday show, from Uncle Banzai's CD, Apology. Of course, it's about that old hat. It's called, I don't even know what it's called. It's, or could it be that hat? I think that's what it's called. You call that a hat, is what it's called. So, I like that group. You're going to be more of it and more of me in the next 2 hours. I actually began planning the show in a hastened manner because I thought I'd lost a lot of tapes, but on my way to the studio, I recovered them, amazingly enough. And I'm still going to do a flashback just because, well, just because. I'd actually sort of been planning to do this for the last few weeks. There, of course, was the famous 2.5-month
River Street, I should say, San Lorenzo Park campground across the river from River Street, actually, right next to the Occupy Santa Cruz and the courthouse. And before that, 2 years before, that was a homeless encampment and an Occupy Santa Cruz encampment. And it was essentially a group of people who did what they had to do to survive, formed a community, and engaged in, sleeping every night, which is a crime in Santa Cruz, both under the Santa Cruz City Sleeping Ban, Municipal Code 6.36010A, for which Gary Johnson was repeatedly cited a couple years ago, and tomorrow he goes to court. Under the second law, 647E, a penal code from the state used by local authorities to break protests, particularly protests by homeless people embarrassing authorities about their first law, the sleeping ban, the municipal code, that Santa Cruz has probably the most extensive version of most of the cities in California who have anything similar. Although large cities, as I've often said before, like San Diego and Los Angeles, have had to stop enforcement of those laws because of court settlements or threatened court settlements. Santa Monica, similarly, there was a court settlement there, and there was Santa Barbara faced a settlement which didn't involve exactly stopping enforcement entirely, but there was some mileage gained through the threat to do so. And Santa Cruz actually had to change its law 2 years ago to theoretically allow people to have tickets dismissed if they want to pony up for, or I should say line up for, a private program called the Homeless Lack of Services Center. They call themselves the Homeless Services Center. And I call them the Homeless Lack of Services Center because they fail to provide the most important service, a shelter. And more important than that, it's not that I expect, you know, an impoverished, shredded social net to provide shelter for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. But I expect them to be honest about what they are providing, what they aren't providing, and I expect them to stand up for their clients when they're dragged to court for the crime of sleeping. And that is not what the Homeless Lack of Services Center has been doing the last 2 or 3 years under the, recently under the directorship of Monica Martinez. They've instead been testifying against homeless activists in court, falsely claiming that on some regular basis there's a reasonable expectation of shelter if someone comes there. If you actually ask them, they never have any shelter. There's a waiting list 2 to 6 weeks long, and that even that list will be gone in a couple of weeks because the Paul Lee Loft, their so-called, isn't even emergency shelter. It was emergency shelter. It's now a sort of a short-term program. Will be filled up with space from the long-term program from Page Smith, which is being renovated. So they've moved all the folks, or they're going to move folks from Page Smith into Paul Lee. All of which is kind of secondary because it really has to do with such a small number of people. But the reality for most homeless people outside is they have to face the indignity, the threat, the humiliation, the physical jeopardy of being outside, losing their property, threatened by the police, and then having to scamper to leave when the police tell them to go, and to go nowhere in particular because they have no legal spot to send them to. And this has been an issue that, of course, has been around for decades, and a lot of us have been fighting for decades and will continue to probably struggle to fight one way or another, even if only in cranky letters to the Sentinel. There have been mass protests in the past against this, and one of them was a thing called Homies for the Homeless in 2007. It actually was compared to Occupy Santa Cruz, which was a much larger, more continuous and successful protest. And the protest 2 years before at Peace Camp 2010, which created this exception law, which said if you jump on the waiting list to the Homeless Lack of Services Center or the River Street Mini Shelter, you can get your tickets crossed off for sleeping. Of course, what police have now been doing is instead of sleeping tickets, they're giving out, and this is borne out by the blog, the Santa Cruz Police Department's online blog, you can check it out, massive increase in the number of tickets for being in a restricted area. And if you look up and down the levee, you'll see all these new signs posted which do not allow people to be there because they're, quote, protecting the vegetation. This, of course, is likely a complete pretext based upon a couple things. I haven't examined each individual area, so there may be some areas where they actually are trying to protect the vegetation. But the one area that was sort of notorious about this was the area of the drum circle, the Wednesday drum circle, driven away from the farmer's market several years ago, finally landed in across from CVS, formerly Long's Drugstore, next to the bridge over the San Lorenzo River, the Soquel Street Bridge. And that was a place where people kind of had festivities every Wednesday. There were Food Not Bombs fed there. I think Renee Curry brought her food there. Various folks came and gathered and danced and talked and sang and so forth and played drums. It was a drum circle area. Well, of course, the authorities didn't like that, particularly since, indeed, some people pulled out their sleeping bags later and slept there. They had no other place to go. It was equally illegal everywhere. And so the authorities set up a series of yellow tape indicating that this was going to be a reforested area. What they did to reforest it was first they tore down all the trees, tore down all the bushes and shrubbery, and it's been barren for the last 2 years. And I suspect, can't tell you for sure, but they're probably doing exactly the same thing in many of the areas along the levee. They've adopted other policies that I've commented on regularly about curfews at night at City Hall and at the courthouse and at the library and at the police station and on the levee path, which are designed to give the police a weapon to simply drive away poor people from public spaces who are socializing, sitting, talking, or trying to sleep. It is a way of criminalizing people outside. And it really lacks some primary constitutional legitimacy. I mean, the Constitution was not made for poor people anyway. It was made by a bunch of rich white slave owners, mostly. And it has changed a little bit since then and broadened somewhat. You know, women have got the vote. Blacks no longer are chattel slaves. We're just all wage slaves these days, or many of us are. It's still a situation where privileges go to the few, power and land and property go to the few, and the rest of the people are spending their time essentially being moved around by those folks and their agents in the police department and the local governments and the national government and the corporations and the property owners. So, in 2007, there was a protest called Homies for the Homeless, which actually we were simply trying to act on the kind of heels of the Jones decision in Los Angeles, which made it cruel and unusual punishment, according to the federal court, to arrest people for sleeping. In the past, you know, the defense has been used, well, if a person is in an area where there's no place to sleep, they can show that there was no shelter that night, and they really tried to get into the shelter, then in court, when their ticket comes up, after they've been arrested, after they had their property confiscated, after they've been held in jail or cited or had to walk to court two or three times, after they've gone to the police station to pick up their property, if it was taken from them on those small windows of time when you're allowed to do that, then they would have their ticket dismissed by the judge because of the so-called ICORN decision, which says that you have the right to use the necessity defense. Actually, the tickets wouldn't be dismissed. You could argue that there was a necessity to sleep, and then, in theory, the judge could rule, and you don't get a jury trial for these kinds of things. The judge would rule, and he would sometimes spare himself the need to go through a trial to rule it. Yeah, there was no shelter that night. Fine. Your case is dismissed. Have you put in all this energy? Now just don't go sleep tonight and do it again. Otherwise, you'll be back. You'll be back here, you know, in 3 months, because that's how long it takes these tickets to go to court. Of course, by that time, a number of tickets will have piled up. The police will be using additional forces to clear away, destroy your property, as seems to be happening with people in Santa Cruz now, up and down the levee, in and out of the Poganip, all around the town. Anyway, in Santa Cruz, we began a series of weekly protests, HUF did, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, group I'm with, in front of the bookshop Coonerty, which you may know better as the bookshop Santa Cruz downtown, called the bookshop Coonerty because the Coonerty family owns it. And at that time, Ryan Coonerty was the mayor of Santa Cruz, as he was again 3 or 4 years later. And we held songs there. We petitioned. We did interviews. And, you know, our civil rights, in spite of the occasional police question, were I think they were respected. I don't recall a lot of police interference. And indeed, Coonerty ignored us. We attempted to talk to him because he is the mayor, and he would think he'd have some accessibility to the public, but he didn't. And then 3 or 4 years later, he still didn't. And that seems to be the nature of his administration. Lane, our current mayor, is somewhat more accessible, but when you hit on a sore point, like criticizing his homeless lack of services center, which he's much more kind of wed to than Coonerty, because he's been on the board for 20 years at least, the board of the Homeless Lack of Services Center and its predecessor organizations. He won't talk to you either at a certain point, or he will start getting evasive and make up excuses and smile and turn the other way and so forth. But the issues we were raising were the same ones that are raised by homeless people throughout the country, which is such sort of basic things as where is it legal to sleep? Give us a spot where you can go lie down and crash, because we have to get up in the morning and we have to do what we need to do. And that's something the Santa Cruz authorities adamantly refuse to give or say. And they still do, of course. It's the ongoing problem we have. But at that time, we had mobilized resistance, because we had this decision that was then potentially a decision applicable to Santa Cruz, the Jones decision in Los Angeles. Subsequently, it was settled by the ACLU, which means that it no longer was a precedent and simply resulted in a court order to the L.A. police that they should not arrest homeless people at night unless and until, I don't know, so many units of affordable housing were provided, which haven't been provided yet, and they have to be at least 10 feet away from a building, and I think that those are the two main requirements. And they're still going after homeless people under a variety of other pretexts, but that law and that particular criminalization of homeless people in the most blatant way, you can't sleep at night, was removed. And so in Santa Cruz, we wanted to do the same by documenting that. So we decided to have a one-night sleep out at City Hall. And we called it Homies for the Homeless. It actually turned out into a 7-day sleep out. And I was going to play some tape from that and some tape also from the, I call it tape because I got tapes. Perhaps you newcomers would call it audio. It's sound recordings from that period when people did, as they did later in 2010 at Peace Camp 2010 and last year at the Occupy Santa Cruz area, and tonight and last night and every other night, but most people aren't doing it now as a protest. They're doing it simply as a necessity, those who do it, slept outside illegally. And there were other things happening at this time, and I'm going to play a few interviews from that time. This is 2007 in August. And I'm also going to play an encounter with the American Civil Liberties Union, which then was under the leadership of 5-time Mayor Mike Rotkin. I played this before. I played this 5 years ago. But I'm going to play it again just because. And I have to say the ACLU hasn't advanced much. Our local ACLU, although it has taken a somewhat equivocal stand supporting Bradley Stewart Allen, I should say, sorry, Bradley, and Alex DeRosi as expressing concerns about their being attacked as members of the Santa Cruz 11 who are simply reporting reporting sympathetically or reporting it more exhaustively than the Sentinel media or the video media from the corporate television stations. And ACLU locally has also, I think, made a statement of concern about all of the Santa Cruz 11. Those are the 11 people, myself included, who are accused of various fanciful crimes for essentially reporting on being present in and supporting a peaceful occupation of a vacant bank building. And that's an ongoing case. I'll be talking about that during the show, too. Unfortunately, for those of you who are listening who don't know, we had hoped that some of us had hoped that the charges, I'd hoped, too, sure, that the charges would all be dropped on Monday because of the really blatant violations by the district attorney in not providing evidence that they've been repeatedly ordered to provide. I should say that she has been ordered to provide. But in any case, the ACLU in Santa Cruz is much worth talking about. But it's kind of fun to see how it's important to expose these things. And I think first I'm going to play a few interviews from 2007, and then I'm going to play an attempt to go to an ACLU meeting with some of our signs and petitions. It was an open meeting, declared open to the public, out at the Marine Lab Center where it was held. And you'll hear what happened. Most of you who follow this show regularly know what happened, but those who don't will learn. First, of course, we have to deal with Mickey Mouse. Occasionally it creeps into my recordings, and we'll see if we can address that issue.
Well, it's about 2:15 in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz on Sunday, the 26th of August, 2007. That's Billy Starr strumming away. You got Valerie Christie holding an End the Sleeping Band sign. And we have from Chalk on the Sidewalk, Help End the Sleeping Band. And here's a prisoner of poverty eating a pear and with an incriminating piece of chalk in his hand and bizarre black marks on his head. What does this mean, sir? What is your name?
Shag Too Dope.
And Shag-Doo, what's the deal? Why are you? How are you a prisoner of poverty? It says help, please. Is this a panhandling scam? What's the? You're trying to rip off these innocent people the money that rightfully goes to these merchants downtown?
Yes, I am.
Well, how successful are you?
Very. This greedy bastard needs to give more to the poor.
I see. Well, are they giving more to the poor? Or are you in fact terrorizing them away from the poor?
I believe that I am attracting attention to the poor and trying to put a spotlight on the fact that there is more people out here that need help.
Now, are you yourself poor?
Yes, sir, I am.
And are you homeless?
Yes, I am.
And how long have you been in this deplorable condition?
20-something years on and off.
Now, are you how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
About 20-something years.
And homeless throughout that entire period?
Yeah.
And how has it changed one way or the other? Have you noticed any shifts?
Yeah, I've noticed more of pushing the poor away and trying to make us disappear, push us under the carpet type treatment.
Now, have you been ticketed for sleeping recently?
Not recently.
But because of what?
Because I found a better place to hide.
Have you heard of anybody getting any sleeping tickets in the last week?
Not firsthand.
Okay. And how long have you been out here eating pears with your hands stuck through in a handcuffed fashion, your prisoners of poverty, please help sign?
About 2 minutes.
And how much money have you garnered?
Today, about $6. Yesterday, $12.
And it's, of course, all going for drugs, alcohol, and prostitution, right?
No, it goes back into the carnival.
We'll ponder that one later. Again, we've been talking with
Shag Too Dope.
Thank you, Shag Too Dope. Wait, madam, you've been seen chalking on the sidewalk. Would you like to put your hands behind your back?
The cops can go get screwed. We all need a place to sleep, so they can all go get screwed. Take away my birthday. See if I care. It's only next month.
So, are you outside sleeping, Damone?
Yes.
And I understand you were in shelter for a while because of a domestic abuse situation. Has that been cleared up?
Yes.
And have you been hassled by police for sleeping outside?
Not here lately.
Have you heard of anybody getting sleeping tickets? Or?
Yes, I have.
And what's the most recent report you have?
I know of 3 of our brothers and sisters right now that have got sleeping tickets.
When did they get them?
Over this past week.
And what were the circumstances, you know?
Their camps were completely destroyed by Ranger Wallace.
Cleaning up the environment.
That's what he says, but no, he's full of it. We got his laws, and he is patrolling unlawfully, because it says in his rules and regulations that he has to patrol on foot. So learn your job or quit.
Rather harsh words for the dear Ranger Wallace.
John Telfair, you're sitting here, sitting down, without your panhandling sign, with your cane.
I heard about the ACLU meeting today, and I would like to know why the ACLU hasn't done more for the rights of mental patients. They seem to be the forgotten people in this country, and the homeless next to that, I guess. The only people that seem to be interested is a religious cult called the Church of Scientology, and I'm very skeptical of any kind of religion, period. So I just don't know what's the matter with the ACLU on the issue of the rights of psychiatric patients. So I'm concerned about that.
Well, you may ask them a question or two out at their fundraiser at Schaefer Road, eh?
Well, I'll try to get up there if I can. I'm not able to help them financially. I ask for help for myself. But I would like them to take up that issue of the rights of psychiatric patients. They have less rights, in my opinion, than a lot of the people
in the bigotry at the bookshop, Santa Cruz.
Than a lot of the people in the criminal justice system. It's terrible. The way their rights have been taken away.
U.S. out of Iraq.
I'm all for the ACLU helping gay people and helping everybody else, but for the homeless and for the psychiatric patients, they're not doing what they should be doing, in my opinion.
Thank you, John.
And John Telfair is quite a guy. I met him first back, I think, in the late 80s. He was running a group called the Mental Patients Liberation Front, or MAD Liberation Front, something to that effect. Really sort of a carry-on from the 70s when such organizations were strong in Berkeley and elsewhere. And he was really helpful in trying to assist people who were incarcerated in psychiatric wards under 5150s, the involuntary 72-hour holds that people face when they're accused of being unable to take care of themselves or danger to themselves or danger to others, and then often forcibly medicated, which has been a real concern and still is, particularly now that we're learning that medications that are forcibly provided or even those that are voluntarily taken of the psychiatric sort can be worse than no medication, although, of course, it depends on the person and everybody has their own approach. Anyway, John was a fellow who traveled back and forth between here and North Carolina, where he had a partner, and he would do this by bus. He was a poor man, and he was in his 70s. And when he came to Santa Cruz, he had to make some money to make these trips, and he would do it by holding up a sign downtown. And on a number of occasions, police officers would come up to him and tell him he had to stand up, this man, somewhat frail in his 70s, and hold his sign, because in Santa Cruz, it is illegal to sit down holding a panhandling sign on any of the waist-high areas. At least that was how the police were interpreting it in 2007. And there are still very, very, I call it a panhandling ban, but it's a severe restrictions on panhandling, peaceful panhandling, even silent peaceful panhandling. And John would hold up a sign silently. But he was still harassed, and we tried to publicize this, and I don't know if we were particularly successful in stemming the harassment. We couldn't get any local lawyers interested. ACLU expressed no interest, although I don't even recall us taking it to them. But, you know, this news does kind of pass around, and Mike Rodkin at that time was on the city council. He wasn't the mayor at that time. He was the mayor the previous year in 2006. Anyway, the next segment of tape is about going out to the ACLU and what happened there. Again, this is an annual meeting that they have, open to the public. About 100 people usually attend, including members of the public, in a really broad area. There's a music being played and food provided, and there's no admission charge. You don't have to be a member to get in. And here's what transpired.
Locke, we're out here at the Marine Lab at 100 Schaefer Road, where ACLU has a large sign on the building indicating some kind of a lecture event today. There's some orange ACLU signs. Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
What are the signs for?
We're going to show them to a few folks.
Well, can you do this outside instead of inside the event because it'll be disruptive?
We're not going to disrupt it.
You're not welcome to bring the signs inside. This is a.
And that voice is the voice of Mike Rutkin. Then it says, you're not welcome to bring the signs inside.
Private event.
Open to the public.
You're not allowed to bring signs into this event. We've organized this. We've rented this space. You may stand in the parking lot and hold your signs. You're welcome to come in without the signs.
Well, we're not going to necessarily disrupt anything.
You're not allowed to bring those signs into our event. We've rented this space, and you're not welcome to bring them.
It's open to the public.
Robert, don't come in with those signs, or I'll have you arrested.
Is this the ACLU? Well, that's your choice, Mike.
No, you're not coming inside with the signs, Robert. Go call 911, get someone with a cell phone, or have the police out here to deal with it.
Okay.
Meanwhile, you're not going in. Don't force me to physically restrain your arm.
The police are being called because Mr. Rutkin doesn't want these signs in here.
Free speech.
You're welcome to stand outside and hold them. We've rented this area.
This is the American Civil Liberties Union. We can't walk in with some signs.
We need to confront.
Is this the American Civil Liberties Union?
Sleeping ban. It's been too long.
So what do we got?
You know,
back outside.
We have a Santa Cruz
outside.
Mike. No.
Excuse me, Robert. Take your sign back outside.
Are you making a citizen's arrest?
I will if you step outside.
Why don't you do so?
Because
this event is open to the public. Now you can make a citizen's arrest of your own.
I'm going to make a citizen's arrest if you don't remove the sign outside.
We need some witness. From the ACLU who are concerned about civil liberties.
Robert,
rather play some music.
You're claimed from outside with your signs. You're welcome
inside. No. This is a public event. We're entitled
you
to come out.
You are not entitled to bring your signs here. We rented this space. It's a private event.
It's not a private event. It's open to the
open
public.
To the public.
Sorry.
With your signs.
Now, there's no sign that you're not allowed to have signs. You can't do that, Mike.
Robert, take the sign outside.
Unless that you can show in court that this is disruptive and you're being disruptive, you're blocking my path. Please move out of my way.
I am blocking your path.
Please move out of my way.
I'm not going to move out of your way.
Sure, I'm trying to come into the event and observe what's going on. It's open to the public, right?
No,
it's not open to the public.
It's open to the public, but not with signs, under the conditions in which we invite people. We don't invite them.
I'd like to see that in writing somewhere. Do you have that in writing? No, I don't think so.
I called the police.
Is this the ACLU or what? Come on.
Go ahead, Barbara. I know you're trying to make a great event.
No, I'm trying to come in and observe what's going on.
No, you're
not disrupting anything.
That's disruptive.
Carrying a sign is disruptive.
Can you put your sign out there? Can he come in?
Absolutely. I
can. Sir, can you leave your sign right there?
If this is the ACLU, I don't see why I should leave a sign behind. The ACLU supports the right to have signs in public places. I'm sorry.
We've rented the space here. This is our event. It's not a public space.
Hey. Well, we must disagree. Police are being called by the ACLU to stop signs from being shown.
No, you can show them right there in front.
No, you're not allowing us into the meeting. And we aren't being disrupted. We're just trying to walk in and sit down. That's all.
The public is invited to join our event, not your event.
We are joining your event. We haven't disrupted anything. If we disrupt something, you can ask us to leave. We have disrupted nothing.
Carry your signs outside, Robert.
No. Mike, you're being dictatorial, and this is not the city council.
Have the police deal with it when they get here. Let's do it in an orderly fashion. I will have you arrested. You can take me to court if I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, I guess. You'll be in court, and I'll be in court again. ACLU is having me arrested, folks. Well, I better demonstrate this sign while I'm here.
Outside, Robert. You're not open. You're open up in here.
You could always try to destroy my sign, Mike, like you did in 1996 when you seized signs at City Hall. You may remember that. You don't. You don't. You've got a convenient memory, Mike.
So you're not outside.
No, this is a public event, Mike. You cannot privatize a public event once you've announced it. So you're blocking my way. I would like to move forward, if you want to... Ridiculous. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, are you supporting Mr. Rutkin's approach here of not letting me walk into your meeting?
He seems to be quite reasonable so far.
He's welcome to come in. He's not welcome to bring his signs inside. You can post them against the fence. You can hold them outside. Whatever you like. This is our event. This is not a public event.
I have not. No. You can't select the flyers that people have, the signs that they bring in. It's open to the public. It's open to the public. The ACLU should know this.
There's actually.
I don't know what's wrong with you guys.
Point, Robert.
Give me the case,
please. Try to disrupt those.
We're not trying to disrupt anything. You're disrupting my right to walk into a public meeting, Mike.
No, I'm not.
As are your friends here, and it's really sad that the ACLU is doing this. I don't understand why. Ms. Brodsky, why is the ACLU not letting me into this meeting?
He's been invited in, but not with his signs. He can leave them outside.
You don't allow signs in a public meeting?
No, this is not a public meeting in that sense. This is a private meeting. It's a membership drive.
It's open to the public.
And people pay to get in here.
No, it's free to the public. I asked your member, your fundraiser beforehand. It was online. She said, yes, it is.
Essentially, it is to raise money for ACLU, and everybody who has entered has given $25 or more.
But it's not required. That was my understanding, otherwise it wouldn't come out.
Well, and then I think you got...
Well, you gave misinformation to Jenny Heath, who was giving out information about this.
Well,
and it also said open to the public.
That was inappropriate. I'm sorry. But it's that kind of an event.
It's been announced as open to the public.
Well, we can go back and forth. It seems to me, I think you would understand that this is a membership fundraiser.
Why are you so disturbed about having people sitting inside your meeting with different views?
I'm concerned that you don't sit inside a meeting.
Oh, you are.
That you are going to be disruptive as it has happened.
There's no indication. Give me one instance of when I've been disruptive in the past in one of your meetings.
Listen, I'm not going to stand and have a conversation.
No, that's slander, you know. No.
Essentially.
It's not going to persuade me of anything.
It might. You never can tell, Mike. I'm always open to reasonable
I'm
argument.
I'm sort of asking you because we have worked so hard to do this. Months of preparation.
You're not the only one who's worked hard on issues, and we're here to, you know, to be here as well. So
I understand that. And
well, stop blocking my way so I can go into this meeting and sit down and relax.
What are you going to do? Push me over?
What?
No. I mean,
why are you blocking my way? You're blocking no one else's way. You're blocking my way. And you're letting this guy, who, you know, has a habit of doing this at city council meetings, to disrupt the right of the public to come in and to a public meeting.
I have blocked you from coming to a city council meeting, Robert. That's an absolute lie.
You've blocked the right of the public to make comment at various times. You've had people arrested.
Oh, now we're changing the subject.
No,
it's not blocking your way.
You're on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, Mike.
We force you to stick in the time limits that you're afforded. That's the only thing you ever did.
No, you constricted time limits at city council, but also...
So now we didn't stop you from speaking. We just told you had a...
You're blocking me from entering a public meeting. Right now, you are standing in front of me. In fact, I think I'll take a picture of you.
We're hearing the ACLU speech.
Acknowledge the contributions in defense of civil liberties of some of our local citizens. These are people who show us that it is...
And actually, it looks like the tape cut off there. I think either somebody else picked it up or... for some reason, I don't have that next segment. But what happened was the police arrived, and they heard Mike Rotkin's citizen's arrest desire, and they simply refused to do it. They said he has a right to be here with his sign, which was an amazing turn of events. I mean, the police department of Santa Cruz almost invariably... on the side of the authorities. Perhaps it hates the ACLU so much that it was amused at seeing this division between them and our group. The next year, when we came back, when Ryan Coonerty, who became mayor the next year, was being awarded the, I think it was called the Lion of Justice or the Hammer of Justice Award for hammering people with his parking lot panic law and his anti-homeless policies, which are a continuation of Rotkin's policies. Coonerty was mayor that year when Rotkin blocked the way. We were let in. We did come in with signs. They were quite friendly. And one person stood near the stage with a sign quietly, which denounced the ACLU's failure to support homeless people around the right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere at night. I think they learned their lesson because we were willing to risk arrest. And it was quite likely, in my view, that I was going to get arrested. But I thought it was an important issue, and I also thought it was a bogus arrest. And the police, for their own reasons, perhaps, agreed with me. So that's just kind of a little bit of history. I'm sorry it doesn't have more of the actual back and forth. But let's take a musical break and jump up to 2012.
children can drive here to the churches that keep us alive. How does it feel standing out in a field with the women who kneel at the thought of chenille? I'm nothing but meal, and I'm hardly a meal.
Wednesday afternoon, sunny, breezy day here. You can hear the sounds of Guitar Guy in front of our meals. And it's the infamous Bob Dylan early 60s stuff. We have a man who's going to play a tune, but let's introduce him first. Your name, sir?
My name is Street Boss.
And Street Boss, you're back. You're looking distinguished. You got a suit, a tie. You got a coat, a tie, vest, and a guitar.
I got a ragged combination of stuff.
And you're here to play.
It looks pretty good. Well, I'm here to tune my guitar up.
We'll let you tune first. Yeah. And we have a singer up the street here who has a pretty nice voice.
One's life will it be like for the times they are changing.
Anything of your own original composition? I see you have your No Hero album out here for sale.
No Hobo.
Hobo, sorry. No, oops.
Hobo. Slightly Hobo.
No Hobo. Somewhat Hobo. Hobo-ish.
Wishful thinking, maybe.
Have you done any recent compositions reflecting the realities of Santa Cruz?
Not particularly. I've been out of town for a little while. I just got back from the South and just did the West Coast for the fourth time. So I was just in Seattle 5 days ago and just got back into town.
And how does it feel? Any different?
This place is always welcoming.
Yeah. That's great. Some of us don't feel too welcome here, but others do, and that's good.
Musically, it's nice. You know, I guess, I don't know. This place feels more like home than most places I've been to. I thank you very much, boss. Appreciate it very much.
Well sung, too, I might add. So, have you done anything recent that you've composed that you want to sing for people that is that might have both intelligible words and some coherent message?
I might be able to give you a little taste of something.
Alrighty. And we're listening to the music of?
My name's Kyle Dahl.
Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
Broken, burned out, smoldering and smoking. Break the cage and run like hell. A bitter place awaits a soul raised hell. Well, it's all a dream within a dream within a dream inside itself. We're as free as we believe. Just how you perceive yourself. Say third eye open, know your soul stop banging on the door. Uncertainties you're facing, your mind just can't stop chasing all those pictures from the past. They last now. You're looking up ahead. Well, in the end, it's all the same. No one to blame. You can't find no way. It's all a dream within a dream within a dream inside itself. We're as free as we believe. But it's just how you perceive yourself. How open for your soul, stop banging on the door. You gotta let it go.
And we call that song.
It's not even titled yet, I'm not sure.
Way cool. You are, is it on one of your discs?
Nah, that one's not recorded yet.
This is a first here. You heard it first on Free Radio Santa Cruz? We're talking
talking with a man who was trying to dispense
cologne.
And you work, both of you, you're working at the... You get 50% of this?
Yes, I do.
And what is your name?
Maria.
And you are?
VG.
And this questionable person who just gave me a hug...
Don't ask me, I'm Princess Jasmine.
You are the one. She's mine, you hear? Mine. All right, so...
Take her with you.
Hey, if she'll come, so to speak. Now, what about you? How long have you been doing this, and what are you selling cologne?
Yes, colognes and perfumes.
And is this paying the rent?
Most definitely is, my good sir.
Now, is this something you have to do kind of door-to-door, or do you...
No. Nothing like that.
Your own company?
Yes. We are starting our own companies right now. I'm opening up in Pismo Beach in the next month. So right now...
Create this cologne, are you selling? You're a secondary.
I am just a third-party distributor.
And have you been hassled by police for vending without a license? Bum, 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 bum.
No.
We have business permits.
Not in Santa Cruz. You can't get a business permit to do this. But I'm hopeful that you'll be successful nonetheless.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
How long have you guys been in town?
In town?
Here in Santa Cruz.
Oh, just, I say, roughly around 4 hours.
Welcome to Santa Cruz. Go to sleep, go to jail. That's our motto for the homeless here. We try to be fair or unfair to everyone if we can. Where were you last? What kind of work were you doing at other cities? Have you been doing the same thing?
Yeah.
We're in a business training program.
And who is training you? Is this a secular or a religious group?
Secular?
Secular.
Religious, yeah.
I was up at the University of California, Berkeley yesterday, and every single booth, with the exception of one or two out of about 40, were all Christian fellowship stuff. So it's kind of, it's good to see some honest capitalist crap on the streets, I gotta tell you.
Thank you.
And capitalism, wonderful duo.
Yeah, but the two of together, they go together like,
AB&J?
Something like that. I wish you luck here in Santa Cruz. What's your next stop after this?
I have no idea. Wherever the wind takes
Capitola.
Us.
Crapitola, is what it's called.
Or Crapitola, more like Crapitola.
You've been here before.
Yeah, a couple times.
And were you doing this for business or for pleasure?
No, for business training.
For business training. Well, give them the business, that's what I say.
Yeah, will do.
We've been talking with...
Sorry?
Your name again.
VG.
And...
Maria.
And...
Princess Jasmine.
Do I get... But we're talking with...
Jennifer.
And Jennifer, you're panhandling here downtown. How's it going?
Absolutely deadly.
So, you just got a buck and change. How long does it take to make that?
Well, today it's been about 30 minutes.
And have you received any kind of support or friendly interaction or have anything positive that's come your way yet?
Sort of, but I feel more that I've been lied to because of how, as this little catch-22, you just can't get off that last step.
And tell me more about that.
We've got a house, but we can't get to it because it costs too much. Spare some leftovers, please.
So where is your house?
It's out in Marina. It's a clean and sober community, thanks to my husband being clean and sober for over 2 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We just can't afford, you know, the bus tickets, the day passes, you know, for this county and that county. And then on top of that, they want to charge us now $75 for two background checks with the paperwork. I mean, $75. You can't make that here in Santa Cruz.
They're charging you $75 again for what? Sorry.
For paperwork, you know, the red tape, BS, and, you know, background checks. And I'm like, we can go and give you a copy of that from welfare office, or we can get a copy from the police station. They're like, no, that's not good enough. We have to do our own.
So how long have you been, what brought you to Santa Cruz this particular time? Visiting friends, enjoying the thrill of the downtown?
They were his grown kids who said that they would help us out and allow us to even just, you know, sleep on their floor and then get a cold shower, you know, or a hot shower, depending on there's still some hot water left, you know. But no, they don't even bother to call us or anything. They're a bunch of liars.
They live here, and you came here hoping to be able to place to crash here?
Yes, exactly. But can't even do that. And yet, you know, all they care about is drugs.
Sounds depressing to me.
It sounds pathetic to me. And outright, you know, just, they should all be in jail. They should be out here on the street.
Have you had any contact with other folks outside and had any other discussions with them?
What have you found? Is yours a common situation? Is it rare?
It's actually pretty common, except for the fact that we don't drink, we don't do drugs, and it's actually harder for us to go and survive here on the street than it is those that do the drugs or that are drunks. And that's what's sad.
You never have nothing.
It's absolutely pathetic.
Thank you.
And we're also too intelligent to be on the street.
I hear you, man. Well, this will be going out over free radio probably tomorrow night. And it's also archived. If you ever get to a computer, you'll be able to check it out. Here's a card.
Okay.
In case you want to ever look for it.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
All right. Again, we've been talking with...
Jennifer.
And...
Jesse.
Thank you both. Say that again.
We've been all over the United States, all the way up to my wife's hometown of Lexington, South Carolina, all the way to Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, St. Paul, Minnesota,
Seattle,
Montgomery.
Even Sturgis.
Where is Sturgis? I never heard of it.
South Dakota.
Yeah.
There you go. So you've been further than I have.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not even a biker chick. I don't like the biker rules. You know, I'm sorry, women are not property.
Sturgis is a biker town? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much.
Very much. Very much a biker.
You have a Harley Davidson t-shirt.
Yeah.
Are you a biker? Aha. Are you a biker chick?
No. No, because we've had the discussions, or actually, to be more frank about it,
I'm a father now of two unborn children that I want off the street, and our government and welfare isn't trying to help. And I'm doing all the footwork, and nothing's getting done. And like my wife was saying, we're trying to get into this program at Palo Del Mar. It's an 18-month program that will help the homeless community out that want to get clean and sober and get back on their feet. It's 30% of their income. But we're having to do the footwork while they're sitting back in a nice, cozy office collecting money and getting rich off the poor.
Poverty pimping, perhaps?
Yes. And that's not right. You know, a brother gets out here or a sister gets out here, yeah, we use, we drink, we do it to ourselves. But when we ask for help from the ones that's been out here like us, why make money off of us when you're clean and sober? Help us out to get to where you are. Even though I've got 2 years, I did part of it on my own with my sponsor, talking with him daily, listening to his suggestions.
Yeah, and don't go and judge, you know, a woman for being pregnant on the street. Not all of us had the babies conceived on the street. Mine weren't.
Now, are you pregnant now?
Yes.
And when is your pregnancy due to come to term?
I'm actually right overdue. And I am so little, it's pathetic. I've got cheekbones showing, you know, because I am that underweight. I cannot eat enough. I just simply cannot eat enough. And, you know, there are people that are mean. They run over us. I mean, they literally walk over us. I have thrown a bag of carrots at this woman that cussed me out and told me to shut the fuck up because of how I told her, bitch, don't run over me. I exist. I'm a human being. Treat me with some dignity and respect. Learn how to drive.
You're here.
Yeah, I am. And I have the right and the freedom of speech to do so.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And you're welcome to go and send donations to your radio show host. Well, you know, to us on behalf of the radio show.
How can people send donations to you?
To you, and in this way, I'll give you our contact information. This way, our...
anonymity will be preserved.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Well done. All right, well, so there you have it, folks. If you buy these stories, if you buy this account, if you believe these folks, and you got some money you want to give, send it to me, Robert, at give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I'll arrange to pick up the boodle, and I promise I won't run to Venezuela. So you've already gotten a ticket, you were telling me?
Yeah, I've gotten actually numerous tickets, camping ones, as well as then also just sitting down on the curb for 2 minutes counting change, you know, right outside of, you know, the subway and the Quiznos, trying to make sure I had enough before going in, because it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm pregnant. You know, I need to rest my feet. I'm tired of having swollen ankles.
And where was this? What city?
Right here in the Santa Cruz. And that's the one where you cannot sit down. There's also others I've heard about. One of them is a section of district or two there in San Francisco, the tourist, you know, sections. So you've got right there on Market Street where you've got the funky-looking hospitality guys with the huge Mad Hatter hats.
They can't camp out.
Like, say again?
From 7 to 11, there is a no...
no sitting?
No sitting, no camping, no lane, no nothing on Market Street anymore. Because...
Oh, we have to protect the tourists.
Yeah.
And Jesse is talking about the San Francisco sitting ban passed by... the initiative was, I think, put on the ballot by Mayor Newsom when he was mayor. And something similar is happening in Berkeley with Mayor Bates. These are sort of right-wing, pleasing, hot-button issues that go after a population that has no political power and can be scapegoated quite easily, poor and homeless people. A sitting ban. Santa Cruz has had a sitting ban since 1994, which was expanded in 2002, and again in 2003, and again in 2009. And it's pretty outrageous. I kind of, you know, I become a nerd to it because I hear so many stories, but here's a woman who says she's pregnant, and she looked like she could be pregnant. Didn't seem to be extremely pregnant, but she was rather frail. And she, according to her account, she was sitting outside the subway on Cathcart and Pacific, it sounds like, and was given a citation for that. And perhaps she told the police officer, "What the hell are you bothering me for?" And he decided to punish her by giving her a citation, which would be actually a violation of the actual code section, since he's supposed to warn her first. I guess maybe he warned her and she said, "I'll get up as soon as I finish counting my change," or something. And that wasn't enough for the good armed thug. He decided instead to press on with the ordinance, probably without any complaint. I doubt Quiznos complained about somebody counting their change out front of the store. These laws and the police officers who enforce them acquire a kind of zombie-esque life of their own, which creates a zombie-ish kind of zone up and down Pacific Avenue. And it's also, you know, I don't have a heart that's heartbreaking, and I want to use that kind of a phrase, but it's a little sickening to hear this. It makes one cringe a bit. It makes me cringe a bit to hear this account. I mean, this is a woman who's outspoken. She's, you know, she's salty in her language. She's angry. And you might say, why isn't she nicer to people, you know? And indeed, the whole time that I was interviewing these two, they were sitting on a bench illegally panhandling as they did. They were asking for change from people passing by with a sort of an edge in their voices. They were angry and upset as they saw well-to-do people and shoppers walking past whose needs appeared to be much less than theirs, who were ignoring them, you know, and brushing past them and so forth. Not that I don't do that all the time with people who are panhandling. I do. And there are those who advise me that it's really a kind of a criminal act to go by a panhandler, even, you know, if they may spend the money on booze or dope without giving away something. Because it takes a certain amount of away from your soul and your dignity to even have to do that. It shows a kind of desperation. It shows a kind of wretchedness, which used to be fabled in, you know, 17th, 18th, and 19th century industrialized cities, like in England and other large European cities. U.S. too, of course. Let's hear a little more, and then I'll make some other comments.
Protect the tourists, and the tourists are the ones causing all the problems instead of the homeless. They judge us for past due records, and some of us might not even do what they say, and it ticks me off. And I don't like getting ticked off. I don't like using violence no more. You know, I hate it. You know, and the cops are pushing too hard. The police here in Santa Cruz are pushing too hard. Officer Clark, Winston.
You might regret that, saying that.
Well, I will personally say that I tend to agree with you around Officers Winston. I have also some criticisms of Officer Clark as well.
And a few others. You know, especially Officer Coffey, the rookie cop. He's the world's worst. He's quick to the draw to want to pull his weapon out and just want
to... Has that happened to you?
Not yet, but it has to others that I have known, that I do know.
Yeah, we saw this guy tased 4 times straight back to back, and then on top of that, brutally beaten. And, you know, it's like, hello. You know, if you're tased like that, and you're tased on a very strong level to where it's gone through, you know, you got the road to the street, and then you've got the welfare office building walls right there, all the way inside, room full of all of us, you know, trying to get assistance, trying to get off our feet and all that, you know, survive. Because, you know, if you really think about it, you do your research, you're going to find out the food is not that good. It is not. And it's not that much either. If you go and you get, you know, seconds of anything, it's like, wow, it's shocking. It's... You know, I mean, I've been told, you know, with being pregnant just recently, you know, and I asked for, you know, some extra, you know, mashed potatoes. I was told, we can't because we have to do it for these other people. I'm like, I got babies in me, you know?
Let me ask you again about this tasering. When did this happen?
About 3 weeks ago at the welfare office.
In Santa Cruz, Emmeline Street?
Yep. Yes, sir.
And what time of day?
It was like about... 2:30, 3 o'clock, like it is now.
Do you remember what day of the week?
It was on a Monday.
And how close were you to this incident?
The victim I'm very close to at they tase. I'm very close to him. He's a very good friend of mine.
What's his name?
Jackie.
And what happened to him?
They took him to the hospital because after they tased him so many times, it caused him to go into cardiac arrest.
And what were the? How much of the whole situation did you see?
Every bit of it.
What happened before the tasing began? What was he doing?
He just was being Jackie.
Which involved what?
Being a total wingnut, as we call him.
How was he wingnutting?
He walked into the welfare office, looked around, and goes, bang, bang, up in the air, and he goes, this is a holdup. Looked at the officer and said, give me all the money, and then walked out. And then next thing we know is there's two other Santa Cruz Sheriff's Department deputies there tasing him and beating on him.
Inside or outside?
Outside.
Yeah. And did anybody try to intervene?
No.
Did anybody say anything?
Everybody in the lobby did.
What did they say?
They said, that's not right. That's uncalled for. And the workers at the welfare said, that's acceptable for homeless people like him.
Is that a quote or is that an approximation?
No, that's what I heard with my own ears. It was acceptable for them to do that to that homeless person.
And what things did you hear?
It was all that. Plus, you know, I even said it's illegal because it is. Because of how, you know, a person has the right to go and pull up their pants when their pants have fallen down from, you know, being tased. You know, when somebody's hurt, you know, if their pants have fallen down, they have the right to go and pick up their pants and button up their pants. You know, however that means.
Now, when did this guy's pants, Jackie was his name?
Yes.
When did his pants fall down?
Just right there during the tasing.
And so he was naked, or?
No, he was showing his behind. I'm going to be nice about it.
So he was booning them?
Yes.
Yeah. So his pants didn't fall down, he kind of took them down?
No, they fell down. When they hit him about the second time with the taser, he had to let go of his pants, and it was down to his knees, and he tried to run on them and said, let me get my pants up, let me get my pants up. And they said, stay down. Pop, pop.
Yeah, and they did it with a perfectly straight, strong arm tasing them.
Yeah. And how big is he? 6'5", 6'1", 5'8".
Jackie?
Yeah,
he's about 6'1", 6'2".
How well built?
At one time before he started using and all and drinking, he was a pretty big boy, but now he's like skin and bones.
And did he physically resist the officers?
No, he didn't.
No, he was trying to...
What did he say as this was happening, if anything? If you heard anything.
It was basically along the lines of, you know, help and stop and, you know, about with the pants. And,
you know what happened?
Kind of like screaming out in agony.
You know what happened to him afterward? He was taken to the hospital. Have you seen him since?
No.
We haven't.
But his bike, his the officers had to be asked an extremely lengthy amount of number of times to even go and pet his bike in their trunk.
His bicycle?
Yeah, so that this way nobody would steal his bike.
And which officers were involved with this?
There's two city officers, Winston and Clark, that showed up. One of them was on their day off that got the call on his radio, and he came up there on his day off.
Who did the tasing?
Santa Cruz Sheriff's Department.
How many cops and the deputies were involved?
There was like about 8, 9, maybe 10 officers there just for one man.
Well, this guy could have been a skin and bones threat, right?
No.
No.
No, not
he,
ever.
He didn't even have a water gun. Did not even have a water gun. He's like, you know, hello.
So he must have been, was he intoxicated in some way?
He was off of his medication, and he's been off of it for a while.
So they gave him a little taser therapy, eh?
Yes. A little brutally taser therapy.
Again, we've been hearing this account from
Jesse
and Jennifer.
Thank you both.
Talking with
Laurie Soderman.
Laurie, you just got out of jail about a week and a half ago. What, for shoplifting booze? Or?
Yes, that was it.
And how long were you in jail for?
5 months.
For shoplifting, how much? Would you take a whole carton? Or?
No, I took 2 bottles of Patron tequila.
Did you enjoy it, or were you stopped from even drinking the damn?
I was stopped from drinking it.
And I suppose they didn't serve any tequila in jail.
No, they didn't.
Is there bathtub gin in jail? I mean,
no, there isn't.
And where were you, on the farm and the women's division here?
I was at the Blaine Street facility, which is a wonderful facility.
It is good.
The Blaine Street is, yes.
But you were speaking critically of the medical quality of jail.
The medical needs a lot of help.
Tell me what kind of assistance didn't they give that they should have?
Dental and just proper female care.
Which would be?
OBGYN. Okay. Services.
Okay, and now that you're out, you have a place to go. You're in a program.
I am.
Did that take a lot of work to get into that? Or?
Took a lot of personal work, yeah. Yes.
What about, is it accessible to most of the women in jail or not?
Yes, it's accessible. It's called the GEMA program, and they have access to the GEMA Day program, which empowers women to help better themselves.
Well, you're smiling. I will say that. You seem pretty cheery today.
Yes, I am. I'm happy.
Glad to be outside, I imagine.
I'm glad to be outside. And I'm in the GEMA Women's Transitional House, which allows us to work on ourselves, heal ourselves, and teaches us how to take care of ourselves. And for me, this time around, I'm learning how to communicate and be kind to myself.
You better be. Otherwise, I'll have to be kind to you. You know what that means.
No. I got a man.
Fair enough. Hey, again, we've been talking with
Laurie Soderman.
Thanks, Laurie. Yeah.
And you are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, or go to TuneIn on the Internet, and you'll find Free Radio Santa Cruz if you put in the letters FRSC. My name is Robert Norris. The show goes until 8 o'clock, at which time Uncle Dennis comes on with music galore from the 60s and 70s in a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. Pretty interesting show if you like that kind of music. Plus, he does Earth First updates, environmental updates. I'm now going to follow up on an interview that I did last show, which was on Sunday. On Sunday, I do a long show. I talked at that time with Steve Schnarr of People Power. Steve talked about a number of things, including how People Power activists supported a bike ride on King Street, the street parallel to Mission Street on the west side, which ended at one of the People Power activists now running for city council, Micah Posner, was actually ticketed for not having a permit to do a bicycle ride, which was fundamentally a community event. I was at either that bicycle ride or the next one, and it was all very there were all kinds of people out of their houses with lemonades, tables, and things like that. It was a community event, and the idea that the police department would move in to try to harass bicyclists really kind of, well, it's not unusual that that kind of thing happens when community activists get active. I would be the first to admit that. But it, against sort of an establishment activist like Micah, I regard him as being a very relatively conservative and low-key activist. He's been working for expanding bike lanes and other things for about 15 or 20 years, or maybe a little less, 10 or 15 years. And sometimes I've taken other sides in the issues he has. I've encouraged him to speak out more forcefully about police repression. He's running for city council, so I think he may feel he has to clip his wings, which I always think is a dangerous indication that city council, running for city council is one good way to ruin yourself if you're an activist. And not only will you have no time to do anything, but you'll be double talking before you know it, and you're screwed. But Steve Schnarr is a guy who, he delayed giving me this interview, and apparently what he's just sent me on the email, a press release, talking about another issue that I've brought up on the air before, which is to say, the tendency or the decision of the police department, apparently with under consultation, in consultation with conservative members of the Santa Cruz City Council, the Vice Mayor Hillary Bryant, perhaps, or Lynn Robinson, or David Chiracis, Ryan Coonerty, you never can tell, to move the, encourage the police to give their bicycles instead of giving them to the hub, or I guess it's called the Bike Church, which is up there right next to the Sub Rosa Cafe at Pacific. And is it Sycamore? I can never get the name of that street right. Turn them over to a more kind of upscale yuppie group called the Bike Dojo. And in order to find out about that, Steve Schnarr requested the public records emails of communications between city council members and the police department on this subject. First, he was told, oh, there are a lot of communications. We've got to take time to give them to you. Then he was told, oh, they're all private communications. But, of course, city council members don't legitimately have private communications on public issues that involve the community. Their communications need to be open. But a number of city council members, including Cynthia Matthews, for instance, but not including Don Lane, who insists his emails are open to the public, to his credit, upon my pressing him, a number of council members insist, as did Mayor Rutkin, as did Ryan Coonerty, that all their emails that aren't sent to the city council offices specifically or that are sent to their other servers, even in the capacity of council member, are private. And even those that are sent to them as city council members, if they're on their private servers, they're private. And that, of course, is a real abuse of the power of their office. It also gives a real opportunity for corruption and favoritism and special privilege to worm its way into the city council corridors, where, of course, it's been safely ensconced since history immemorial, but leave that aside. Here is what Steve wrote me. Robert, you'll note a new development if you read it through. That when I responded to the city, yes, I do want all the public records of communications on this issue. That is, why did the city change from having the police department give the bicycles that it's acquired or they've been abandoned or haven't been claimed to the bike church that could then be fixed up and passed on to poor people, rather now to the bike dojo, which is a little bit different. I don't know what their policies are, but they're a more upscale, less activist group. And again, reportedly at the behest, I don't have any direct evidence of this, these are secondhand stories through people power activists, of the conservative city council members, this whole policy changed. She waited until the last hours of the last day she had, this is a city employee, and gave me four brief and uninformative emails. I inquired further, and she admitted that a council member had originally claimed that there were dozens of emails on the topics, but later realized these were in a private account. She didn't realize this. She probably ran to the city attorney and said, can I sequester and hide these emails from the public, because they'll expose what I'm doing. Again, I'm speculating. Maybe not. Maybe they were completely innocent emails. She was simply trying to protect her privacy. Maybe she was discussing sexual matters with other members of the community. I don't know. But the fact that business about bicycles, and that's what these emails were, a request to get information on, I imagine, was being held back under the excuse that they're in private accounts. Sucks. Here's the press release. People Power apparently is finally issued. I thought they should issue this one some time ago, but it reads like this. For over 15 years, unclaimed bicycles at the SCPD have been made available to local nonprofits to match up for free with youth in need. Since 2006, the nonprofit repair shop, The Bike Church, has hosted the distribution on their site, inviting other participating nonprofits and offering assistance in checking bikes over and performing minor repairs. Without any notification or public process, the city recently ended this program and instead gives all its bikes to a for-profit business, which is allowed to sell high-quality bikes which once went directly to youth. This company also happens to be a business partner with the spouse of the very council member who pushed for the change. And I wonder who that could be. I actually, I can speculate because I know that Ryan Coonerty is married to the jewelry shop heiress, but I don't know who the other folks are spoused up with. At least I don't have that information at my fingers. If anyone does, please call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number here at Free Radio, and please call in at any point. In 1996, the City Council directed the SCPD, the People Power press release continues, to make unclaimed bikes available for youth through local nonprofits. 10 years later, city staff faltered, allowing dozens of bicycles to rot in the landfill. The Bike Church stepped in to help reinvigorate the program, taking over its administration and hosting the distributions on its site. Groups such as Barrios Unidos, the Resource Center for Nonviolence, the Walnut Avenue Women's Center, the Boys and Girls Club, and many other groups participated, distributing roughly 100 bikes each year. The Bike Church, a community repair shop and recycling center, kept the broken and severely dysfunctional bikes that no others wanted, salvaging used parts which, as per their program, are made available cheap to free to the public. Earlier this year, at the request of Councilmember Hillary Bryant, the SCPD ended this successful program and began giving bikes to the for-profit business, the Bike Dojo, which also partners, with Bryant's husband, Dave Schumann, in his Cruisin' Pedicabs company. This change, made without any public process or even notification to prior participants, is also marked by a more significant change in the fate of the bicycles. Whereas in the past, the functional adult bikes, and indeed almost all the bikes are adult-sized, were distributed for free to teenagers, the Bike Dojo is now selling these bikes to fund their distribution of small kid bikes through nonprofit partners. Ton Kennedy, director of the Greenways to School program, expressed frustration at this development, having personally matched up dozens of working bikes with youth in our local high schools who did not have the means to buy one. Sandino Gomez of the Resource Center for Nonviolence noted, "Thanks to the generosity of the city's distribution program, we were able to get dozens of teenagers onto bikes. It's a real shame to see them now being sold. In these times of economic hardship, that's going to affect those most in need." Steve Schnarr of the Bike Church, who helped facilitate the program for years, notes that this sale of nice bikes clearly violates City Council's directives from 2006, which allow for the sale of only the most dysfunctional bikes, while explicitly forbidding the sale of bikes that require moderate repair. A public records request also revealed that almost all emails between the City Council and the Bike Dojo were made using or later switched to a private account, not subject to public review. This lack of transparency feeds suspicions about a conflict of interest in light of business ties between Bryant's husband and the Bike Dojo. Schnarr, along with other Bike Church mechanics and outgoing People Power director, Micah Posner, are working to try and reinstate the former distribution program, which was transparent and open to all nonprofits. And then included in this public press release from the People Power, and I believe it's from People Power. Let me see. I know it's from Steve Schnarr, who works at People Power. I think it is, although I don't know if the name People Power is on it. He gives the emails where he requested information regarding all the public records and then only got four brief emails at the very end of the public records time period when they're supposed to give you public records. It's I believe it's 10 days. So I think what I'm going to do is put through a call to Micah Posner and see if I can get some kind of statement, some kind of, if he has anything to say about this. I may not be able to reach him. See if I'm trying to understand exactly this new policy. It's a little unclear to me. I know that the bikes are going to this new upscale group, but I don't know exactly what procedures are then being followed. And let's see if I can learn a little more about this. I don't know if I'm going to be able to reach him. Our phone access is somewhat limited, and I suspect I'm going to find I'm in trouble with this, but we'll see. I got a ring here, so that's something. Let's see how we're doing here. We have are calling Micah, who is running for city council, so any member of the public should be able to call him and ask him questions about this, particularly since it's a matter in which he presumably has some expertise. And I'm waiting for a machine to answer or a person, and I don't see it happening.
Hello, this is Micah Posner. You've reached my cell phone.
Ah, there we go.
Leave me a message and I'll get back to you. Thanks.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hey there, Micah. This is Robert with Free Radio Santa Cruz calling you live on the air. I've just read Steve Schnarr's press release, or the People Power press release, and I wanted to get your comments, both as an activist for broader and more democratic and more economically, well, poor people included kind of bike use, around the issue of the bike distribution program secret backroom deal, which sounds something that you've been kind of reluctant to put out, but apparently finally got out on that one. If you get this message before 8 o'clock on Thursday, do give a call to the station, 427-3772. Also, if you can let us know when the upcoming candidate forums are, that would be helpful in case people want to waste their time going to these forums. I used to spend a lot of time there, and I still want to make sure people know when and where they are so they can bring the appropriate kind of flavorful and fragrant fruit to distribute at these plutocratic rallies, where, of course, the wealthy candidates will likely be the ones who win, and the right-wing idiots are going to be the ones who will continue to rule the city council. But do give me a call. 423-4833 is the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line. It's at home. And let people know when the upcoming forums are, and also try to clarify this issue for me so I can better inform the community. Thanks a lot, and be talking to you. Give me a call. And that's Micah Posner. If you want to reach him, his number is 227-4772. 227-4772. I believe that's a public number. He's running for city council, so you can ask him questions yourself on this issue. So, I'm glad for that update. I'm sad that that's happening, but at least if we expose it, there's a chance it may be changed. I'm going to repeat that tomorrow, at 8 o'clock in the morning, there is going to be a gathering in front of the courthouse at 701 Ocean Street, where so many people have been banned. If you show before 7 o'clock in the morning, you are illegal. If you're carrying a sign, if you're sitting, if you're talking, if you drive your car, and that's all criminal behavior now. And you can get up to 6 months in jail or a $1,000 fine for trespassing on the government property that you, your taxpayer, are paying for. This is all an attempt to dissuade public protests there, and it was all done behind closed doors, back room, as Steve Schnarr describes this other policy. A lot of backroom stuff seems to be going on. But in any case, Gary Johnson is going to court at 8:30 in the morning in Department 2, facing a 6-month jail sentence that he's already been convicted of, has appealed. Appeal was turned down, and I guess Ed Fry, his attorney, will also be there. Ed Fry has already gone to jail and has gotten an ankle bracelet that allows him to actually be under house arrest and then also work. He has to come down. He's allowed to come to court and represent his client. And that's in spite of the judge, a visiting judge, who told him, when he was when Ed Frye was sentenced to jail or told to return to jail that he could not represent his client. The sheriff's department apparently simply does not want to house an attorney there along with a bunch of other people, and said, you know, go house yourself outside, but keep this ankle bracelet on, and you know, don't try to fly to Chile or whatever. So he's coming to court. 8 o'clock. There's going to be coffee, and there's going to be people standing up for the right of homeless people to sleep, not necessarily anywhere and everywhere, but certainly somewhere. And also the right of people to be in public spaces and engage in peaceful protests, as Gary Johnson was when he was arrested 4 times, night after night, for lying on a bench with a sign, "Sleeping is not a crime." That was the same bench you'll be able to see. It's right in front of the courthouse where we're going to be serving coffee and hopefully a bit of information about this issue to those who aren't aware of it. Then we're going to go into court at 8:30, and we're going to support Gary. Gary has his own opinion of court. He thinks it's not even worth coming to court. He thinks the less attention given court, the better. He thinks it's a fraud. He thinks it gets too much attention. And I think he's right. However, it's not just him that's getting harassed for sleeping, harassed for being in public spaces. It's a lot of other people. And because the issue is one that's broader than simply his wishes, I think it's important that we raise the issue, even if he might prefer something else be done. And so we're going to be there. We encourage other people to come. And I don't think he really minds. I mean, he's not asking for it. He's a very independent character. He didn't do this as a part of Occupy Santa Cruz. The original conviction came from something that happened with Peace Camp 2010, that really predates all the Occupy stuff. And then, in the right after Occupy abandoned its post, so to speak, in front of the courthouse, he stayed around the corner and, independently of Occupy, and said the city, the state, the county, the district attorney, and the deputies have no right to tell people they can't sit outside with a sign after 7 o'clock at night on the courthouse steps. They just can't do it. It's a violation of the First Amendment. It's an unreasonable restriction on peaceful protest. It's a clear attempt to shut down the right of the community to petition the government for a redress of grievances, as the cumbersome language of the Constitution puts it. So check that out tomorrow. There's more about it on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. If you want to be on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list, you can. You can also give some money to Gary, put it on his books if he goes to jail tomorrow. He's not likely to get any ankle bracelet, because he's not an attorney and he doesn't have any money. You need to pay $18 a day to get an ankle bracelet, so that's not likely to happen for Gary. And it's not likely to happen for any of the dozens of other homeless people who have been cited or arrested in the police crackdown at the behest of the Hillary Bryant mob, as I call them. And I don't know that Hillary Bryant is a specific leader in the Take Back Santa Cruz vendetta against poor people outside. But certainly the police department has taken a far more active role, and I wonder, where it's coming from. And I frankly, until council members speak out against it, I'm going to hold them all accountable for not doing that. That includes our old friend Don Lane, or Gon Lame, as I called him 22 years ago, 24 years ago, actually, and still do. People who have these illusions about progressive council members, just like they have the illusions about Führer Obama, need to really put them aside and get back to the issues. It's not worth a lot of time talking about these political hacks who are negotiating away the rights of everybody, selling everything off, continuing criminal wars abroad and criminal wars against the poor at home. It's just not worth spending a lot of time, except to expose them to those who should know better. But, you can only say something so many times. People have to come to their own decisions on this. So, musical break time, and perhaps a break from a call from you, perhaps. Oh, you listeners out there in Radio Land, if you have some thoughts, now's your chance. You've got about half an hour to call in and talk. So, use the opportunity if you wish, and we'll hear you. going to actually turn to one of my old favorites, which, call me an arrested adolescent, but this is another one of Uncle Banzai's songs from the 80s. Let's see if it actually plays. I think it will.
Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm not my best. Want sex in the morning, petting and pawing, tearing at my breast. Want someone who's winsome, someone to pin, someone to undertake. Boys want someone to fall on, someone to crawl on, someone half awake. Want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, covers at my knees. Want rotten condition, passive position, I am a trapeze. Want someone who's sleepy, someone who's keeping nothing in too deep. Want somebody first hand, someone to first, and then go back to sleep. There is nothing I like better than a jostle now and then, with the hands under the sweater and the back that starts to bend. But before my eyes are open, I don't want to have to hide from a simpleton still poking with a thimble full of pride. Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, soiling the sheets. Sex while I'm yawning, suddenly spawning, when I'm half asleep. Boys want someone unconscious, somebody not just waiting for a thrill. Boys want sex with surprises, sex with sunrises, someone on the pill. There is nothing like a lover who can satisfy your needs, and the joy when you discover just how often he succeeds. But before my eyes can focus, I don't need him to surprise by descending like some locust on a field of sleeping thighs. Boys want sex in the morning, sex in the morning, when I'm still not fresh. Want something that strikes them, someone who likes them, fondling their flesh. Want someone to take and someone to break and comment on their size. Want someone to prod and someone who'll nod and then just close her eyes.
And on the line with me now is Becky Johnson. That was Boys Want Sex in the Morning. I don't know if that's an 80s song. It's probably still true in 2012. What do you say, Becky? You're
it's
a sexual expert.
It's one of
expert.
Those timeless classics, Robert.
You think so? I mean, you know, times...
describes the human condition.
Don't you think times have changed in 30 years? I mean, there's sort of a new generation. Isn't there a different sexual code of some kind? I don't know myself.
I believe that... There are still boys who want sex in the morning.
Hmm. Well, I know there are girls
even
who want sex in the morning. I can tell you that, too. You know.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, all of sex in the morning should be between people who want it.
Right, right. Well,
and match them up together, and the world will be a happier place.
Well, we could go into this in more detail, but you actually are facing, I don't know if it's more serious or more, actually it's more bullshit in my view, but you and I and five other people and a lot of supporters came out of a hearing in Judge Burdick's court on Monday for the Santa Cruz 11. The hearing was supposed to consider Sanctions to Rebecca Young, district attorney, for improper retention of discovery and other kinds of bad behaviors that compromise the cases of the Santa Cruz 11 or the 7 that remained. And you and your attorney, me and my attorney, a bunch of other attorneys all showed up. Give us an account of what happened, could you?
Well, you know, Judge Burdick had issued some pretty stern ultimatums, it sounds like, on Friday. So, but on Monday, there was Rebecca Young with all her ducks in a row and flanked by David Sherman and Jeff Rosell, two other DAs. And they apparently spent all weekend getting all of her discovery documents together in a form that the defense attorneys could actually quantify what the discovery was and get a chance to examine it with their clients to create a defense for the clients.
Let me interrupt just for a moment, Becky, because I really have to take issue with you on two of those claims, although I understand she did present for the first time these hard drives of everything the police department had, she said, finally. But she didn't give what the judge ordered her to give on Friday, which is a description of everything she had previously given to each separate defendant so that we could compare and see who got what and what perhaps was not being given.
What process was used,
but more important, what everybody had. Instead, she gave simply these, she went down, she said, and she bought 7 hard drives and then went to the police station and unloaded all the video information and presumably that some of the documents as well. But having done that, I have to say that I know my attorney requested the police department's First Amendment policies for dealing with protesters, since we were engaged in First Amendment activity there at 75 River Street. I was reporting, and so were you. You're a bloggist. You're blogging it up. And, you know, I got no such documents. I got today a list of everything that was on that drive, which Rebecca Young did not provide, but David Beauvais had to go through, he's my attorney, to, you know, look for and see what was there, and there's no such thing there. And I also think she failed to provide, I guess at that hearing, maybe it was later that day, later on a Friday, you got the damage estimates from the various companies that cleaned up the 75 River Street afterward.
Yes, the billing sheets for the damages. I posted that on my blog.
You've written a story about this on Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking. That's where, actually, a lot of the details, you've been following this for the last 8 months, right, on your blog.
Right. Well, you know, usually if you have face criminal charges, you're not supposed to talk about the case and just kind of stay mum and wait for the judicial process to play out.
Now you're a homeless activist. I'm breaking in here because I realize I began talking about this case, but we didn't say what we were talking about. And people who don't know about this case, although most everybody who's listening to this program probably does, because we have a certain kind of select and small audience, I think. Although I don't know for sure. And I hate to go through the whole damn thing again, but why are you in court at all? What's this all about? What were you doing that led you to be dragged into court and these 11 others, or 10 others as well?
So you interrupted me so that you could tell the audience what the case was about.
No, the audience doesn't know what the case is about. I hope you will tell us what the case is about.
I don't think that was sufficient reason to do it that way, but no matter. It's your show. The 11 of us, there was an action that took place last November in which certain parties entered a long vacant bank building at 75 River Street, and they occupied the building, attempted to turn it into a community center for 3 days, and then left peacefully, cleaning up before they left. And months later, D.A. Bob Lee comes down to indict 11 individuals of the 13 names that the Santa Cruz Police Department had turned over. And lo and behold, I'm one of them. And so I got arrested at my house and charged with 2 felonies and 2 misdemeanors. So it's not quite sure where I was before.
We are trying to bring you back to Monday, but in order to have people understand the context, I'm glad you brought that up. And so on Monday, you were saying that Judge Burdick felt that the DA, Rebecca Young, had sort of patched up her case. I interrupted you to say, I don't know that she really had, and that was my concern about Burdick. And go ahead with your thoughts on that.
Well, I think there's something highly suspect when the people vacated the building in, like, December 2nd, 2011. The indictment didn't happen until February 7th, 2012. When people were arrested and charged. And then here it is, August 20th, and DA Rebecca Young is still turning over discovery documents to the defense. What's up with that? I mean, is there more discovery? Is it more going to dribble in? How many times has she said, that's all of it, you have everything? She said that several times in these proceedings, and it's never been true. I'm not sure it's true now, even with all these hard drives and everything. Has your attorney, David Bouvet, gotten a chance to really examine the hard drive in detail?
As I said, he has listed for me in an email I got today what he kind of summarized was on the hard drive. And as I said a moment ago, there are certain documents that we requested in May or April even, that are not on the hard drive, that haven't been provided. More important to me, and this is what I, find really telling about Judge Burdick, who we, I think, have really felt happy about, because Judge Burdick, in every single case that's come down the pike in the Santa Cruz 11, he has dismissed charges at preliminary hearings, saying there isn't even enough evidence to take these cases to trial. You know, leaving 7 defendants left because she refiled against 2 of them. But the real problem seems to be things like Burdick is allowing her to claim that she has provided discovery when the emails from and the specific evidence is that she has not. The evidence is pretty clear. It's not, she doesn't even contest it other than stating, I provided all the discovery. When they say, well, what about the laws around the First Amendment procedures of the police? Or what about these other documents? What about the court order on Friday that you itemize everything? And she didn't do it. And Burdick mm-hmm. allows this to proceed.
Yeah.
That concerns me.
Yeah.
What's your thought about that?
Well, I think he's just going to ponder whether he's going to give her a slap on the wrist or make her stand in the corner for 20 minutes. Either way, the charges that they intend for this case to continue to some sort of bitter conclusion way down the road. And
why should we be concerned, Becky? I mean, why should you be concerned? Because after all, the next hearing is in early January. So you have to come back to court. Well, at that time, the charges are dismissed and you have all the discovery. What's the complaint?
Well, in my own case, my intention to renew my teaching credential has been frustrated. I can't do that until these charges are dismissed. And we are also a requirement to obey all laws. And I mean, some of those laws are very, very petty. Yet any one of us could be arrested and jailed, presumably until January 7th, just for a minor infraction.
So, for instance, if tomorrow at the, and I presume you'll be at court tomorrow supporting Gary Johnson?
Oh, yes.
If you chalk on the sidewalk in erasable chalk, as has been done before, I think you've even been convicted of chalking with erasable chalk on the sidewalk, something about the sleeping ban, a decade ago. If you do that, presumably you can be hauled to jail and held on bail for God knows how long until January, right?
It's a very arbitrary system, and yes, that is, they have that potential to hold any of us until those court dates.
Or if you jaywalk, or if you sleep outside with a homeless person, let's say.
It could even be somebody makes a complaint about you that there's no merit to. And that could result in it.
So that's one. I know that you told me you were interested in, because you were the only, you're certainly a defendant. There's only one officer who's testified that you went into the building at all, though many, many people have gone into the building and out, and the police know who they are, and they've even recommended they be prosecuted, and the district attorney hasn't done anything. Among them are Catherine Byers, the council member and former mayor. But you weren't even, other than one police officer claiming he saw you go in, that's Officer Winston, who has a very checkered record in Santa Cruz around activists, very kind of fiery-tempered fellow. You, in essence, it's been your testimony to me, and I believe you, that you sat outside throughout this entire period and were not in any way inside that building, but you, in fact, were there as a reporter, and you were reporting on it, and you actually were, unlike the Sentinel photographer, unlike myself, who went into the building for free radio to report on, unlike Daniel Wotan of Santa Cruz Patch, unlike others, you didn't even go in the building.
That's true. I did not.
And yet, you know, I mean, even if people went in the building, there are so many people who did go in and out of the building in a peaceful protest. Has this had significant impact, you think, on chilling protest in Santa Cruz? Or, and quite candidly, I'm not looking for a canned response, I'm looking for your honest response. You know, we've seen the Occupy movement has kind of certainly diminished in its explicit incarnation from last autumn and last winter. But what about activism where people are willing to stand up to authority and tell police officers, you know, who are then called by authority to crush the protest, we're going to be here? I know that some people did stand up at this Gary Johnson. It was an Ed Fry protest that you were a part of, though I didn't see you chalking on the sidewalk, Becky, at that particular protest. So has it had a repressive effect, or are people standing up to it? What's your feeling about that?
What do you want me to confess to here, Robert? I had a hand in building a sukkah, so there might be a code about that.
Well, I'm not looking to get you to confess, actually. I'm going to get your general sense of whether this repression has simply spurred...
Let me talk a little bit about Gary Johnson, Robert.
Sure, but can you answer that question before you do?
I don't have to.
Go ahead. If you need,
yeah.
Would rather not, I can't force you. I'd like to, but I got a knife to put at your throat. Go ahead.
I really wanted to talk about Gary Johnson's
Go for it.
Case because
he's up tomorrow.
Gary could be going to jail for up to 2.5 years for sleeping. I mean, Ed Fry went home with an ankle bracelet at, I think, $18 a day, which is pretty steep to stay out of the hoosegow. But Gary, even if he had that money, wouldn't be able to do that because he's homeless, and you have to have a landline and a place to plug in the box that tethers you and your ankle bracelet within a certain area and keeps track of you. Gary can't do that, and so it's very likely at this hearing tomorrow that he will be taken into custody directly. Yeah, to begin serving somewhere between 6 months and 2.5 years in jail. This for sleeping and for protesting against laws which outlaw sleeping. This isn't something anyone should be comfortable or be able to explain away or make rationalizations for denying homeless people the ability to sleep at all. Criminalizing that act is a human rights violation. It's causing hardship, and loss of life. Ill health certainly exacerbates mental illnesses and depression. Deepens depression, makes people less employable. There's no good reason for the sleeping ban. It can't be justified. There is no justification for it. And Gary, just, you know, what can one man do? I mean, Gary has just been ferocious in his insistence that he can
continue to protest against the sleeping ban, and he can do it on a 24-hour, 7 basis in what he researched as a traditional public forum, which he believed he had found a place that qualified as a traditional public forum. I believe that Judge John Gallagher declared it a traditional public forum in the Peace Camp 2010 trial.
You're talking about the
so that's what we're going to do tomorrow.
You're talking about the county building, right? The area around the county building?
Yes, his court date. We're going to meet there about 8 and share some coffee. I really hope people bring some signs. And if you want to go in, Gary's not necessarily asking people go in, although you reported that he said either an empty courtroom or a packed one. So,
I didn't report that.
We can decide then between 8 and 8:30.
Hello, I didn't report that, but somebody did. Yeah, go ahead.
Somebody did.
Yeah.
That's supposedly what Gary had said, but I don't know. I'm getting that very secondhand.
Yeah. So I mean, this really brings us back to the broader issue, which is the people who are in the fifth week of a massive police roundup. Harassment effort. Have you been following that?
Well, it's kind of easy to follow. They're publishing press releases like once a week showing how many new citations, how many camps have been cleaned up, is a little euphemism. There's that. And then there's just anywhere that you go in downtown, homeless people are just being rousted from one end of town to the other in a campaign that has really come up a notch of hatefulness. And I believe since the death of Shannon Collins at the hands of a homeless man who was passing through Santa Cruz and had some serious mental illnesses and had been actually released from a mental health facility by they had not filed their appeal to keep him in. Probably would have just been pro forma had they done it in a timely fashion, but they didn't. And so this man, for inexplicable reasons, in a few short seconds, from what I heard, witnesses, killed Shannon in broad daylight and Broadway. And ever since that murder, ironically, there were two homeless men who were self-admitted drunks who saw the assault and tried to intervene. I mean, they did intervene. They pulled this guy off of her, and both of them got blood on them in the process. And the police got there pretty fast, but it wasn't in time for Shannon, and yet these men were forbidden from going to a memorial for her at Grant Street Park. Another aspect of this case that's kind of
San
shameful.
Lorenzo Park, actually. But yeah, we did actually interview them online, as you know. It's probably where you got this information from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What kind of recourse do people have? You're a regular attender at these Huff meetings where people sort of talk about doing cop watches, and I think we've been talking about it for about a month and a half now and haven't done it. Or I call it thug watch because I think it should cover everybody with a gun and a uniform who's walking around harassing homeless people, whether a private security guard or whatever. What's the next step here? I mean, there are people we're going to go to court tomorrow, but, and I think I don't really and totally agree with you. I don't think that I don't think Gallagher is going to send him to jail for 2 years. I think he may send him to jail for the remainder of the six-month term, which is still bad enough. It's like 4 months or something.
Well, he's already done 84 days on this particular charge.
Right. But, it's egregious. And more important, it's only one case of which there are many that are now, coming up completely undocumented and unheralded and unpublicized in Santa Cruz. What do you suggest?
Bob Lee's one homeless bike. amping up with the 647E misdemeanor lodging charges.
What should people do? Becky, I got 7 minutes left in the show. What do you recommend that listeners do around this if they're concerned? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I think that the people who are listening should, if they don't come down to the hearing tomorrow, they should get their telephones and their emails out, and they should write to both the city and the county and say, free Gary Johnson. It's just wrong that a homeless man should face that kind of jail for sleeping and for protesting. And, you know, I mean, we should all have the right to seek redress of government grievances, is what protesting is. And we should never lose that right, not, you know, 12 hours a day, as was done at the county building with these trespass laws. You know, Gary really insisted that our right to protest is a 24/7 affair, and that if you are protesting in a traditional public forum, that lodging law should not apply. And obviously he didn't wasn't able to hold sway with Judge John Gallagher.
Again,
but,
turning from Gary's case, which will be it's already been decided, it'll be something tomorrow. I'm talking about the rest of the homeless community. What should people do about these other folks who aren't getting a hundredth of the publicity, and it's not very much, but it's something that Gary's
calling
doing.
For a suspension of the sleeping ban, Robert. A suspension of it. They need to stop writing tickets for the sleeping ban and for the blanket ban. They just have to stop. It's not something that they need to think about or plan or, you know, 10-year plans when we have enough homeless for the housing for the homeless. The abuse needs to stop, and it needed to stop yesterday.
Yeah, how can people manifest that?
You have to make your displeasure known. Whether you do it in a public way in the street, or whether you do it privately in an email, you can't be complacent, because if you take the position that, I'm kind of neutral on this. I can see both sides. That's not it. You've taken the position that you support the sleeping ban as it is, because the de facto position is the one that's resulting in all human rights abuses every night, all night.
You know, Becky, I'm looking at the police blog on Tuesday, August 21st, and there's a new kind of little entry that says crime stats, a look at citations, and it says last week we took a look at what an average week of calls looked like at Santa Cruz. Today we're going to look at citations given over the last month. Between July 20th and August 20th, the Santa Cruz Police Department wrote 853 citations. Here are the top five citation categories given during this past month in order. 1, speeding. 2, access to closed or restricted areas restoration levee closure. 3,
well, they're everywhere, aren't they?
Open alcoholic container. Yeah. 4, driving without insurance. And 5, cell phone use while driving. It looks to me like only 2 and 3 are really directly accessible to homeless people, though driving without insurance, you know, is possible. And, of course, anybody can speed or use a cell phone while driving. Notice the sleeping ban or the lodging laws are not on these lists. What do you make of that?
Oh, that is interesting. Of course, there are hundreds of laws and ordinances on the books in Santa Cruz, so it could be more move-alongs and less citations written. Although I had seen it, I thought it was the other way around, that in this recent sweep they had up, instead of writing about 30 sleeping ban tickets a month, they were writing 60, 70, 80 a month. So that seems like a considerably increase in in the amount of enforcement.
I'm looking at the other another recent post on this blog, Illegal Campsite Enforcement Week 6. And this says, in the sixth week of this project, officers noted continued improvement, received 23 calls on the hotline identifying potential illegal campsite locations, not mentioning that all campsites in Santa Cruz are illegal, except those on your own private property. In the Jesse Street Marsh area, two mattresses were located that were being used for prostitution activities, and three campsites were cleaned in week six. Only three, apparently. But the following was accomplished. 30 citations issued, 18 arrests, 25 campsites identified and posting, and 12 campsites cleaned. So I guess they mean not just three, but 12. The total for the first 6 weeks of the program are 275 citations issued, 108 arrests, 159 campsites identified and posted, and 54 campsites cleaned. Any comments on that?
I can't believe they're documenting all this. I mean, it's like the good Germans counting how many Jews came out of the boxcar and went into the ovens. Oh, they never did this before. They never did sweeps. They'd have different policies. They'd have different areas where they would, like, periods of time where they cited a lot, periods of time where they just move people along and cited very little. But to be announcing this campaign and calling these languages cleanup and drug dens, and of course, if they clean up a mattress in there, it's for prostitution. You know, it's just such a smear, really. They're the criminals.
I have to interrupt because we're out of time, but I guess people who want to talk more about this with you can talk to you about it tomorrow at 8 o'clock at the courthouse, where there will be free coffee, as I understand it.
701 Ocean Street.
And according to Uncle Dennis, is going to bring cocoa, apparently.
I saw that in your press release.
He's claiming to have seen it in the press release. One last question, Becky, before you go. Is these felony prosecutions now hanging over your head until January going to inhibit your First Amendment activity, do you think? And I want an honest answer on this. Are you likely to do less because of your fear of being arrested?
Oh, sure. Sure, I have to be very circumspect. And I don't know to the degree I can restrain myself. But for my own health and safety and my future freedom, it would be better if I didn't talk about this at all.
Well, I don't care. It's not whether you're talking about it. What about your being involved in other protests that come up? Will you be a part of a second Occupy, for instance? Or you'll be less likely to involve yourself because of this pending prosecution or this actual prosecution?
That's, you know, how do you feel when you're walking around with a little sword hanging over your head, hanging by a string? It does affect you. I hope that I have the courage to continue and to do the things that I would have done anyway. But it's a scary, chilling thing that, and seeing all this arbitrary treatment by law enforcement, the district attorney's office, it's hard to predict, but that's part of the abuse, really.
Thank you, Becky, and we'll hear more from you if you choose to call in again, and maybe you can give us an update on Sunday as to what's happening.
Yeah, thanks, Robert, for covering this issue.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're a little over time. Uncle Dennis here is hovering,
as usual,
hovering over me. It's rather intimidating, but I'll tell you, I'm tough.
I'm going to fart, too.
I faced the DA. I faced Rebecca Young. Oh, she's a mean one. And Bob Lee, even I, are buddies. So you watch your step, buddy. I'll be back on Sunday with 9:30 in the morning stuff. And I'll be there tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning, slugging you with, well, I'll